welcome, I say, my voice just steady enough. Just working out my first move. Trent watches me for a beat too long, weighing me up. Then he nods. Good. Because I need answers. And fast. I give him a tight smile and reach for the folder again. My fingers barely shake. I'm a professional. But inside, I'm burning. Trent hasn't finished yet. If we attend any events or meetings together, you'll be there as my partner, my girlfriend. You'll help me to gauge people, sense if something's amiss. I trust my instincts, but I want a safety net. Someone who sees things from a different perspective, as you demonstrated you're capable of a couple of nights ago. It sounds straightforward enough, but there's an undercurrent I can't quite place, like something isn't being said. I wait. I know there's something else coming. Of course, you'll have to sign a non-disclosure agreement. That's out of my hands, I'm afraid. My lawyers will insist on it. Your lawyers already know about our arrangement? No, that's between you and me. But anyone who gets close to me, either on a professional or personal basis, must sign. It's just a paper exercise that we have to get out of the way. To protect me, to protect the company, all very boring. I pause, studying his face, searching for any hint of mischief or doubt. But his face is open. He means every word. I understand, I say simply. I'm not about to plaster his business secrets all over London, so it's no skin off my nose. But after our amazing night together, him rescuing me after being fired, our adventurous time in the pool and staying over at the penthouse, I have a burning question. I'm just wondering, is this a purely platonic arrangement? Or will we be together? He looks slightly taken aback. Let's just see how it goes, shall we? Keep our options open. He wants to have his cake and eat it. But that's okay, because so do I, in a completely different way. Fine by me, I say. Great. Trent says, as a uniformed waiter appears to top up our glasses. That's what I like about you, Alicia. You don't make a fuss. What you see is what you get. I let my gaze linger on his. Oh, I wouldn't be so sure. I murmur, my glossy lips curving around the edge of my glass. I like to think I have a few surprises in me. Trent grins. I like the sound of that. I take a breath and bring it back to business. So let's say I'm doing my job and I see something that would be uncomfortable to share with you. What's the procedure? He shrugs, a glint of humor in his eyes. Honesty, however uncomfortable, will always be more valuable to me than anything else. You should never hold back or be afraid to impart information. Already fortified by the champagne, it occurs to me that this might be a good time to show him just how bold I can be. I do have one question, I say, holding his gaze to disguise my nervousness. Go ahead. This is an actual job, right? I'll be working for you, under the radar.
That's the idea.
So how much are you going to pay me? Chapter 11. Thursday. Over the next couple of days, I take Trent at his word, and I pack next to nothing. Trent is working away in Europe for the first part of the week, so we agree I'll move into the orbit the day he gets back from Paris. By the time I step out of the bedsit for the last time, there's barely a trace left of the life I had here. My weekend bag is half empty with just a change of underwear, some toiletries, and the cheapest jeans I could find when my last pair finally gave up the ghost. Nearly everything else, books, clothes, an old lamp, has ended up in the local charity shop. It feels like Trent wants me to start from scratch, wipe the slate clean. But that means erasing anything that ties me to the life I had before. And I get the feeling he isn't just thinking about the bedsit. It suits him for me to disappear, to leave nothing behind, not even a ghost of who I was. Of course, I would welcome parts of my life disappearing, but it's not nearly as easy as it sounds. The thought sits heavy in my chest as I watch the door click shut behind me, sealing off the last of it. No clutter, no connections, no proof I ever existed here at all. I tell myself it doesn't matter, that I don't care. But as I step onto the pavement, my bag light in my hand, a dull ache starts beneath my ribs. I've cut myself loose. But where, or to whom, am I running? Alicia Turner. I name check when the shiny Uber X arrives and jump in the back seat, taking one last look at the dive of a bedsit as I buckle up. The driver glances at me in the rear view. The Orbit, right? That's right. He eyes me doubtfully, glancing at the dilapidated front door he's just collected me from. Trent had offered to send a car, but I don't want any misunderstandings. He doesn't need to know I've been living in a room that doesn't even have its own shower, let alone central heating. I've binned that part of my life in the skip along with the other stuff I no longer want. I stare out of the window as we pass rows of betting shops, boarded up cafes, and off licenses with metal grills over the windows. The pavement is littered with discarded takeout cartons and cigarette butts. The further we go, the fewer pound shops and payday loan signs there are. I tried to arrange a visit home to see Brody while Trent was away, but Jen said she was feeling like crap. I think I'm coming down with something. I might have caught it off Brody, she said. Probably best to stay clear for a while. I try to relax as the cab crawls closer to central London, but the churning in my stomach makes that almost impossible. We weave through the city, passing the bold splash of West End billboards. As we cross the Thames, the glass towers of Canary Wharf glint in the sunlight. Then, beyond the rooftops, the Orbit appears at last, a twisting ribbon of steel, catching the light against the blue sky, a promise of something better. Here's good, I say to the driver and thank him as I climb out. I walk up to the glass doors, clutching my overnight bag with my heart beating faster by the second. The doors glide open, silent and efficient, and a doorman, complete with cap and smart gabardine uniform, gives me a polite nod. His name tag says Barry.
Miss Alicia?
He asks carefully.
We've been expecting you.
Just Alicia is fine, I murmur, realizing the guy has probably recognized me because I look so clueless. Barry smiles warmly.
Mr. Connors has been called away this morning, but he's asked me to take you up to the penthouse.
I try to keep my face impassive, but my head is spinning. I'd hoped Trent would be here to meet me. Barry leads me to a small plush lift that's separated from the rest of the lobby behind opaque glass. He holds up a pale gold keycard and points to a swipe pad on the lift wall.
When it detects the gold key, the lobby lift will take you directly to the penthouse. No other keycard can access your level.
He waves the keycard in front of the pad and the lift glides into motion. Then he turns to a sleek black panel beside the buttons.
We also need to log your biometrics to enable you to enter or leave the building.
He gestures for me to step closer. A soft blue light scans my face, then flickers green.
Facial recognition. And your fingerprint, please.
I press my thumb against the cool glass. Another green flash. He hands me the keycard ceremoniously.
This is now yours, Miss Alicia.
I take it, but my fingers feel stiff around the hard edges. No key, no access, no way out. My fingers fumble nervously, and Barry smiles politely as he assists me. The lift is smooth, and movement is barely noticeable, like we're floating up through the many floors. The walls are lined with velvety fabric, not a crease nor a fleck to be seen. I glance down at my scuffed shoes, suddenly all too aware of the wear and tear on display. Thankfully, Barry's eyes are trained straight ahead, and he doesn't appear to have noticed.
Here we are, the 65th floor, I give you the penthouse, madam, Barry announces with a ceremonious sweep of his arm. When the doors slide open, the air changes. It's lighter and subtly perfumed, like someone's gone before us with a fresh burst of lavender. He walks me to the open penthouse door, and a woman approaches from down the hall. I swallow, instantly on the back foot. It's the housekeeper who caught me dancing around the apartment naked. I try to keep my expression impassive, but I can feel the heat rising in my cheeks. This is Mrs. Ingrid Parks, housekeeper to Mr. Connors, he says with an odd deference. Mrs. Parks, this is Miss Alicia. Thank you, Barry. I believe Miss Alicia and I have already met, Ingrid says curtly. Her gaze is sharp and assessing, lingering just a second too long on the creases in my trousers, the battered weekend bag clutched in my hand, the scuffed shoes. Her smile is so tight, it's in danger of becoming a grimace. I thank Barry as he steps back into the lift, and Ingrid gestures wordlessly for me to follow her through to the penthouse. My phone buzzes in my jacket pocket. I glance at the screen while I'm walking and see I have a missed call from Jen. Welcome again, Ingrid says, each syllable as crisp as her starched white collar. Mr. Connors has made every arrangement for your comfort. She glances at my phone before setting off down the hallway, leading me with a confidence that borders on authority. I slide my phone away, feeling like a kid on best behavior about to be dragged around a stately home. Everything already feels out of touch and out of my league. The polished wooden floors glint under the warm, low lighting. Not a single fingerprint on the wall or smudge on the spotless glass of the picture frames. And Brody's little face comes to mind with his sticky fingers and natural curiosity that has him constantly reaching out to touch tactile surfaces and objects. We walk through the light-filled hallway, through the lounge and upstairs. She stops outside the master bedroom. This is your room. Mr. Connors has arranged for his things to be moved into the guest room. Is there some mistake? I say before I can stop myself. I thought I'd be the one staying in the spare room. Ingrid's lips purse slightly, activating a knot of deep lines around her mouth. Mr. Connors' instructions were clear. You are to take the largest room, she replies firmly. He has arranged for it to be fully prepared for your arrival, so I'm sure you'll be very comfortable in here. Her voice is controlled and polite, but I receive her veiled meaning loud and clear. Trent has spent effort getting the room right, and he isn't staying in here with you, so don't get above yourself, bitch. Ingrid regards me frostily for a long moment, as if she's taking stock of everything I am, and, more to the point, everything I'm not. If you need anything at all, please let me know, she says, keeping her cold eyes looking straight ahead. Just dial 1 from the landline. I'm always on hand. And then she's gone, her footsteps fading back down the hall. The door shuts with a soft click, and I let out a breath, my shoulders dropping slightly. It's good to be alone in here, at last. For a moment, I just stand there, in the master bedroom, staring out at the view, as the enormity of what I'm doing properly sinks in. Finally, I toss my weekend bag on the bed and laugh. Not just a chuckle, but a full-blown, almost hysterical laugh. My travel route. Grubby bedsit to lush penthouse in a matter of days. The bed is massive. Bigger than any bed has a right to be, layered in the same silk sheets that felt fluid against my skin when I slept in the spare room at the weekend. A smile sneaks onto my lips again, but underneath the euphoria, I'm braced on full alert. Don't get used to this. My feet sink into plush carpet as I walk across the room, drawn to the glass wall opposite. London lies there like my own private kingdom. Mine to preside over. I turn back to the room, opening the wardrobe and half expecting mostly empty hangers, but it's full. Dresses, coats, trousers, all hanging neatly in my size, in colours I wouldn't have even dared try on in a shop. A silk blouse in an earthy rust shade, a vibrant mustard wool coat with a contrasting raspberry velvet lining. These clothes are a world away from the drab, predictable outfits I've just left behind. Everything I could ever want, but would never have dared ask for. The drawers in the dresser slide out with a craftsman-made whisper, and I find them packed with neatly folded underwear in delicate lace and satin, socks and tights, designer belts and scarves. It's not just a wardrobe. It's a ready-made life. The sort of life, so out of my league, I could never have even imagined it on the cold nights I've spent lying on a saggy, back-breaking mattress in the bedsit. But this stuff is all just set dressing. A stage built for me to play my part. And I will play my part. Because this isn't about indulgence or comfort or even the illusion of belonging. It's about what comes next. The life I'm carving out for myself, for my family. It's about the one thing that matters. So I'll walk across these marble floors like I belong here. I'll sip their expensive wine, wear their designer labels, and I won't be seduced by any of it. Because the second I forget why I'm here, the second I start thinking this world is anything but a means to an end, that's the moment I'm dead in the water. Chapter 12. After I've unpacked my own sparse possessions, including my framed photograph of Brody playing on a chilly East Coast beach last year, which I slide under my pillow, I call Jen back. While the call connects, I force my excitement down a little, so I don't sound too giddy. She's my sister, after all, not some stranger I need to impress. But I want to share my news with her that she's not going to need to worry anymore, that I'm going to give them the life I promised. Jen picks up after two rings, her voice sharp and clipped. What is it, Alicia? Not even a hello. I swallow down my irritation. Jen, you're never going to believe this, but... She cuts in, her tone cold. Brody's not well. My excitement drops like a stone. What do you mean? Again? Is it just a cold? Her sigh is heavy, almost impatient. I don't know. He's got a fever, probably just a bug. Half the kids at a play group are off with it. Why didn't you call me? And say what? He's off colour. She's impossible to talk to right now. This isn't Jen at all. So, you've taken him to the doctor? Jeez, give me a chance. He must have picked something else up from playgroup. I've given him Calpol, but his temperature's still high. How high? My stomach twists. I can't shake the feeling that she's holding something back. He's sleeping, so it might have gone down a bit, she says, dodging my question. Resting is good for him. My mind races. Brody is a boy who fidgets. He chatters and pushes against the edges of his own exhaustion. But now this, the way she says he's just lying there. I imagine him limp and quiet, his little chest barely rising and falling. Can you put the phone next to his ear? Her sigh is sharper this time. Are you even listening? He's sleeping, Alicia. My voice cracks. I need to know he's okay. Well, he's here and I'm watching him, she replies, but there's no warmth in her reassurance. A glance at my phone screen. I've still got time to get a train over and... No, she says immediately. Not today, Alicia. Let's just see how he goes. I stay quiet. She's complaining about shouldering all the responsibility alone, but the second I offer support, she turns it down. What were you calling about anyway? She says. Something about how exciting life is in London, I'm guessing. I hesitate. The news I was so eager to share, meeting Trent, the penthouse, the opportunities unfolding, is now tainted with guilt. I wanted to tell you, things are going to be okay, Jen. This job, it's going to give us everything we want, trust me. There's a pause, heavy with tension. Then she says, sorry, but with the way things are here at the moment, that just sounds like a pipe dream. I bite the inside of my cheek. I'm not just chasing dreams, I'm trying to make life better for all of us. She exhales sharply, like she's out of patience. Listen, I've got to go. Broder needs me. Will you let me know if it gets worse? I say, feeling helpless. I'll call you late. But she's already gone. The click of the call ending, feeling like a door slammed in my face. I sit on the edge of the bed, the plush mattress sinking beneath me. Outside the window, the city skyline stretches on the horizon, but the ache in my chest makes its charm all but disappear. My son is sick, 150 miles away, and I'm here, wrapped in unbridled luxury that feels so out of place. It should be me stroking his hair and pressing cool cloths to his forehead, not Jen. As much as she's doing her best, instead I'm here, straddling two identities while everything that really matters feels like it's slipping further and further away. I don't move for a while, letting the moment hollow out around me until the sound of the door opening snaps me back. I brace myself for another awkward exchange with Ingrid, but these are soft footsteps, heavy footsteps. And then Trent is there, his gaze landing on me immediately. His face breaks into a warm, easy smile.
There you are.
I get to my feet, relieved it's not the housekeeper from hell again. He crosses the room in a couple of strides, pulling me into an affectionate hug. His embrace feels firm and solid. There's a citrusy scent about him that smells fresh and clean. Is this just his cunning disguise? Trent is dressed smartly in a crisp, light grey shirt with silver cufflinks. His hair is freshly combed, though one stray curl falls across his forehead in a way that softens him a little.
Welcome to your new home,
he murmurs, his voice close, sending a pulse of warmth through me. He pulls back just enough to look at me, his hands resting on my shoulders. The buzz of electricity that sets my heart beating a little faster is back. There's something about his smile that makes it so easy to forget everything else, and I'm pleasantly surprised by his affectionate manner. Now I've committed to Trent's plan, I feel more free, even if I have to go through the throes of a fake relationship. Trent clears his throat and walks over to the glass to look out. Has Ingrid sorted you out with everything you need? Yes, thanks. She's a bit fearsome, isn't she? He laughs.
Her bark is worse than her bite. Don't worry, I've got her on a tight leash.
I give him a doubtful little smile. Can't imagine anyone being able to keep Ingrid contained on a leash of any description. Changing the subject, I say, I didn't expect to be given the master bedroom.
Nonsense, you deserve it.
I clear my throat, casting a quick glance at the wardrobe across the room. And the clothes? The stuff in the drawers,
Oh, that's just a capsule wardrobe to get you started.
He reaches into his pocket, pulling out a credit card.
If there's anything else you want or need, go ahead. I'll text you the PIN.
I blink down at the card he places in my hand, his warm fingers brushing against mine. Before I can thank him, his phone buzzes, and he checks the screen with a soft sigh. A flicker of something like frustration crosses his face before he tucks the phone away. I let my thoughts linger. Not on the warmth of his hug, nor on the way he'd pulled me in so close, but on what it means. How easily he's starting to trust me. I keep my tone light and casual. How about a night in? I could cook dinner here, and we can, I don't know, relax over a bottle of wine? Talk properly for once, without all the background noise. I let the offer sit there, unforced, like it's something I want rather than something I need. Because the more comfortable he is, the more he talks. And the more he talks, the closer I'll get to what I came here for. Trent lets out a regretful sigh.
Ugh, Alicia, I'd love to, really. But I've got so much stuff to go through, and I've got lots of calls to make. Early tomorrow morning, I want you to accompany me to an important meeting in Manchester, so you might benefit from an early night.
Always something happening. When will I get this man to myself?
Of course, that's fine,
I say quickly, trying to ignore the sting of disappointment. Trent tilts his head as if he senses my thoughts.
It's just a particularly busy week, unfortunately. But Ingrid will see you have everything you need. Just look at it as a good opportunity for you to get settled in.
Settled in with only his cantankerous housekeeper for company.
Trent checks his phone again, and in a moment or two, I've already lost him to whatever message has just come through. When he looks up, he seems surprised to still see me there.
Anyway, we've got something to look forward to at the weekend,
Trent says, a smile curling at the corner of his mouth.
You've arrived just in time for our annual summer party on the 70th floor.
He lets the words settle, expecting them to impress me. Maybe usually they would. But I'm not here for the skyline views or the champagne on ice. I'm here for him. For what he knows. For the lowdown on the people around him who might hold the missing pieces I need. Whenever Betts gets around to telling me exactly why he needs me close to Trent. Still, I let my smile mirror his, just enough to feed his ego.
Sounds very cool,
I say lightly, as if I'm just another woman dazzled by his world. When, in reality, I'm already calculating how to use it all against him.
It's very cool. The hottest invite in town,
Trent replies smoothly.
It's also the perfect chance for you to meet my most important business partners, all in one place.
He leans back, watching my reaction closely.
Make yourself look fabulous, Alicia. No expense spared.
This isn't just about dressing up. It's about fitting into his world and looking the part so no one questions why I'm there. I log it away. His most important business partners. A room full of powerful execs. Deals being made over expensive scotch and fine wines. Secrets slipping between the cracks of polite conversation. If it's dirt Betts wants, it's going to come up here. I keep my expression smooth and my smile easy. I'll try, I say, as if I'm thinking about dresses and shoes instead of the intel I might pull from his carefully curated guest list.
Trying won't cut it. I've asked a stylist I sometimes use to reach out to you.
He cuts in.
Hazel will help you pull it all together, sort out hair and makeup and that kind of thing.
I can't speak for a moment. He obviously thinks I'm incapable of dressing appropriately to fit in with his eminent guests.
Oh, and I've asked for the final arrangements for the event to be run by you. I trust you to tweak if there's anything you're not totally happy with.
Me?
Yes, you. On the night we met, I recall you had some strong feelings about how the interior of the function rooms ought to look, if I recall.
He gives me a cheeky wink.
I don't want to disappoint you again. But seriously, get your outfit sorted. No expense spared.
My mind is whirring. No expense spared. Trent makes it sound like a royal command. Though there's a part of me that finds it amusing. As if he thinks I can't manage to put on a party dress and look good for an evening without an entire team swooping in to style me. Still, I play along and give him a gracious smile as he glances at his watch. He's off soon after, leaving me with a couple of days of solitude and plenty of time to imagine what Saturday night might look like. As soon as I'm alone, I breathe into the knot of confusion sitting on my chest. My life is getting very complicated, but this opportunity is too good to ignore. Sitting here, looking out at the London skyline, I feel suspended between two worlds. The life with my son I've temporarily left behind, and this one, glittering and full of promise, but maybe just a little too shallow and bright.
And then there's the third pull, the one I can't ignore. The constant, quiet vibration of my other life, the one no one here knows about. The one that was already set in motion before I even met Trent Connors, now tugging me towards something I might not be able to control. Chapter 13. With Trent gone, my curiosity gets the better of me. I make my way up to the top floor function suite of the Orbit, eager to see the place he's described with such confidence. But I'm not here to admire the skyline or be dazzled by the wealth on display. I want to take in every detail before the room is filled with his powerful clients and associates, the seating arrangements, the security presence. Trent wants me here to impress and to blend in, but I'm here to observe, to listen, to gather anything useful. Anything I can feed back to Betts. I step into the vast glass-walled space they call the Jupiter Suite. The hush of money is everywhere. It glows through the plush furnishings and the kind of understated opulence that speaks to real power. But I don't get lost in it. I scan the exits, note the private corners where whispered conversations might happen. If Trent's world has cracks, this is where they'll show. And I intend to find them. I cross the gleaming floor and find myself drawn to yet another panoramic view, this time overlooking a different side of the city. Below, railway lines weave like tangled threads between old brick warehouses and forgotten industrial lots, their rooftops mottled with rust and moss. Church spires and chimney stacks dot among the remnants of an older London hidden behind the shimmering glass and steel. Unlike the sterile, clean lines of the function room we were in two nights ago, the Jupiter Suite feels like it belongs in an Arabian palace. The ceilings are high, adorned with huge crystal chandeliers that look delicate despite their size, each one hanging down like a cascade of stars. The walls are a warm, muted gold, and the furniture is elaborate and carved, small clusters of elegant chairs and tables scattered in just the right places. As I'm soaking it all in, I hear a noise behind me, followed by a sharp intake of breath. Oops! I turn around to see an attractive woman peering around the door. She's dressed in yoga pants, t-shirt and trainers, and carries a rolled-up towel under her arm. Sorry, I didn't think there'd be anyone up here at this time. She pulls a guilty face. I just came up for a nosy at the new function room. Me too. Oh, really? Oh, I don't feel too bad now. She smiles and steps fully inside and holds out a hand. Eleanor Summers. I'd say she's in her early 40s, with sleek blonde hair tucked into a casual chignon. Alicia Turner, I say as we shake hands. You're Alicia. I'm so pleased to meet you. My wife bumped into Trent a few days ago and he mentioned you were moving in. I'm surprised she already knows about me, but her manner seems really friendly, which makes for a change after the chilly reception I've had from Ingrid. Trent's working, so I thought I'd have a little look around, try and get my bearings. Eleanor nods approvingly. The Orbit is a great place to live. We love it here. I look at her. You live here too? Eleanor nods. We've got a two-bed flat on the 50th floor. Not quite up there in the gods like your penthouse, but it's very nice. Your penthouse? She's accepting I'm Trent's new partner without a second thought. I feel a spread of warmth in my chest. The building is amazing. I agree. The bits I've seen so far, anyway. People think it's just offices and function suites here, but the residential facilities are incredible, Eleanor says. There's a private gym, a juice bar, and cafe. Yes, and the most amazing swimming pool up on the 68th floor, I add. She tucks her towel a little tighter under her arm. You've been up to the pool already? I nod. It's amazing, but I haven't seen the other places you just mentioned. If you've got a bit of time free, I could show you around now. I've just finished my yoga class, so I wouldn't mind grabbing a juice. Thanks, I'd like that, I say, chuffed she's so welcoming. A friend here would be nice. I'm already realizing that Trent is probably going to be around a lot less than I thought. The gym gleams with polished chrome and spotless mirrors. After the warmth of the lift, I breathe in the cool, filtered air. I follow Eleanor inside, and I'm struck by the sheer scale of the place. Rows of treadmills and cross trainers line the glass wall, all of them boasting an unrivaled view of London. Each one is equipped with its own computerized screen bearing the bold insignia of the Orbit as a screensaver. Nearby, weight machines stand waiting to be used, their padding immaculate, cables all taut and orderly. Along the far end, free weights are organized in symmetrical rows. Nothing is an inch out of place, and everything whispers exclusivity. Is this place open to the public? I ask, and immediately regret doing so when Eleanor bursts out laughing. Good grief, no. All facilities here are for residents, use only. Apart from the function suites, she adds. Sometimes select businesses are permitted to hire those. Eleanor strides through confidently in her yoga clothing, clearly at home in this space. The equipment is state-of-the-art, as you can see, she says, looking around. Trent insisted on it. He's obsessed with fitness. Half of this is probably for his own benefit. There's a fondness in her voice, and I smile. I get it. I've seen the evidence firsthand. The distracting memory surfaces easily. Trent in the rooftop pool, his powerful shoulders flexing as he hauled himself onto the edge. A stunning woman stands at the squat rack, a barbell balanced across her wide swimmer's shoulders, lowering herself with a grace that contradicts the raw power in her physique. Her grey t-shirt clings to her torso, darkened with sweat down the middle of her back, and her toned biceps flex as she straightens, her muscles taut. She's maybe in her mid-30s, and her figure is incredible. There's a strange magnetism about her, something that makes it hard to look away, even though I know I should. From where I'm standing, her face looks bare of makeup, and her black hair is scraped back, and she looks, well, perfect. Hi, darling, Eleanor calls out. This is Hazel, my wife, she says, noticing my interest. Hazel sets the barbell down with a soft clink, then straightens up and smiles at us. Her eyes, an impossibly vivid shade of blue, linger on Eleanor before sliding to me. This is Alicia, Trent's new girlfriend, Eleanor says. She's just moved in today. Hazel crosses the gym with long strides, a towel slung around her long neck. Up close, she's even more beautiful, her smile genuine. Nice to meet you, Alicia, she says, holding out a hand. I didn't expect to meet you until later today. I frown. Later? Hazel is a freelance stylist and events planner. Trent is one of her clients, Eleanor explains. Trent is my best client, Hazel says and winks at me. I've got some amazing stuff to show you. Sounds great. I can't wait, I say and shake her hand. Her scent, linen clean with a hint of spice, lingers as she steps back. Sorry to interrupt your training session. Eleanor laughs softly. Don't let her fool you. She doesn't always work this hard. She turns back to me. How about that juice then? We say goodbye to Hazel and leave the gym. I've perked up at the realization I probably just met two people who know Trent very well. Just the sort of connections I need to make. The air back in the main building feels warmer. And Eleanor chatters as we walk down the carpeted corridor, telling me facts about the building. The juice bar is tucked away in a sunny corner on the 55th floor. All glass walls, squashy sofas, and potted plants. It's quiet, with only a table of four seated near the window. Eleanor orders something thick and green, and I opt for a mango smoothie. The drinks arrive quickly, served in tall glasses on tiny saucers. So, Eleanor begins, stirring her drink with a metal straw. What do you think of the place so far? I hesitate, tracing the edge of my glass with a fingertip. It's overwhelming, to be honest. I mean, it's beautiful, but
Intimidating,
she offers, raising an eyebrow. I nod. I suppose I feel a bit out of my depth. Eleanor leans back, studying me. Oh, I think that's normal. When I first moved here, I felt the same. She takes a sip of her juice. You'll soon settle in. It occurs to me that if I play this early encounter right, I might be able to find out a thing or two about Trent's past. Something his housekeeper said suggested I'm the latest in a long list of female companions. Is that right? The prickly Ingrid. She gives a wry smile. I don't know about a long list. Trent's a very attractive man, so of course he's had plenty of attention. I stay quiet, hoping she might fill the silence. It's a gamble. She might just change the subject. Did Trent ever mention his last girlfriend, Saskia Portman? Not really, I say slowly. He just said his previous relationship ended a while ago. I suppose that's one way of putting it. Still, what happened was a big shock, although she could be, let's just say, unpredictable. She glances at me. I probably shouldn't say too much. I feel a small shiver at the base of my neck. Unpredictable? How? Eleanor's fingers tighten a little around her smoothie glass. It's just they were intense. They seemed so close, and then, well, she was here one day and gone the next. Awful. My chest tightens. What happened? Eleanor glances toward the window, her gaze becoming distant. She died, and she looks at me. It's really not my place to say, Alicia. The main thing is, Trent seems to like you a lot. I always find it's best to focus on the here and now, not the past. She swirls her glass gently and stares down at the liquid inside. She died. It was heartbreaking, but like I said, it's all in the past now. She gives a small shudder. How's your smoothie? It's a dismissal, and we both know it. She fills the ensuing silence by babbling too fast about the summer party and how amazing it's going to be. It feels an inappropriate and panicked reaction. I try to force myself to focus, but her words fade in and out. My thoughts keep circling back to Trent's past. To Saskia. His girlfriend before me. Who is now dead. Chapter 14. The penthouse lift doors open and Hazel steps out, flanked by two assistants carrying armfuls of garment bags and glossy boxes. She's dressed casually in white jeans and a silky blouse, but she still looks stunning. Good morning, Alicia. Her voice is bright. Your concierge said to come on up. I hope that's in order. It's fine, come on through. Within 10 minutes, Hazel and her helpers have transformed the spacious lounge into something resembling backstage at a fashion show. Trent wanted to make sure you had options, she says, gesturing to the garments being laid out. Gowns in every imaginable shade and cut are draped across the sofas and chairs, each one exquisite in its own way. Sumptuous fabrics, silk, satin, velvet, all catching the light in different ways, some glinting, others absorbing the glow. I'm overwhelmed but thrilled, unable to resist the urge to touch them, letting my fingers glide over the rich textures and rhinestones. Let's have some fun, shall we? Despite my initial annoyance at Trent's suggestion, I'm soon swept up in a whirlwind of silk, sequins, and chiffon. Dress after dress, each one more stunning than the last, is draped onto my body as I step in front of the mirror. I twirl, the fabric of this one catching the light, shifting from deep sapphire to shimmering silver. Hazel perches on a velvet stool, her sharp eyes assessing every detail. Too severe, she declares, about a sculpted black gown I love. Too Debutante. She sighs at a blush tulle creation, waving a hand for the next. Her young assistants flit around me, pinning, adjusting, smoothing out invisible creases. A slinky Art Deco style number clings like liquid gold, its beaded fringe swaying with my every movement. A deep ruby satin drape makes me feel like a screen siren from the 1940s, all curves and quiet power. Looks great, Hazel muses, tapping a manicured nail against her teeth. But we can do better. And just like that, another gown is slipped over my shoulders, another transformation taking shape before my eyes. This dress feels perfect in every way. A long emerald green silk gown that clings to my body in a way that's sensual without being too obvious. The neckline is a daring plunge, but it's balanced by padded shoulders and long fitted sleeves. The silky fabric catches the light and remains fluid as I move. Hazel pairs some sleek silver heels with the gown, the straps delicate and gleaming. My hands skim over the fabric, but my mind is elsewhere. The shimmer of silk, the flattering cut, none of it stops the unease curling in my stomach. Someone died here. There's a shadow I can't ignore in this world of glittering excess. The questions linger. Who was Saskia? What really happened? And why does no one talk about it? But I have to get through all this and play the game. So I force a smile as Hazel appraises my outfit. Turns out there's still lots to get through. So I call Ingrid and ask her to bring us some light refreshments. Just something to snack on and some tea and coffee, if possible. Thank you, Ingrid. Certainly, madam, Ingrid says in that tone of hers I'm still struggling to get used to. I can never tell if she's being obtuse, sarcastic, or just polite. 15 minutes later, she appears with a trolley laden with silver platters of dainty sandwiches and pastel-coloured French fancies, together with tea and coffee. This looks amazing, Ingrid. I give her what I hope is a winning smile. She manages to stretch her tight mouth into some semblance of a smile, gives a curt nod, and swishes out of the room. As the afternoon goes on, Hazel and her team perfect every detail of my chosen outfit. This includes pinning the dress, measuring the heels, showcasing possible hairstyles and makeup looks that would pair well with the gown and jewels. When the team finally leave around 6, with Hazel promising to call tomorrow about the event, I'm left alone again in the penthouse. The once pristine lounge now scattered with garment bags, tissue paper, and empty boxes. For a moment, doubt flickers at the edge of my thoughts. I've entered a twilight world where I'm serving two masters. The man I've been forced to obey for the last 2 years, in the interests of keeping myself and my family free from harm, is a narcissist, maybe even a psychopath. Trent has been nothing but generous, giving me everything I could want and more. But a nagging doubt remains. He's charming, yes, and he's treated me with kindness and respect, but there's so much about him I don't know. The silence presses close, too close, as if something is concealed beneath it. Someone died here. Within these perfect walls, in this very building, with its top-notch security and biometric control, and no one talks about it. I wrap my arms around myself, a shiver running through me. It should feel safe here. It doesn't. I walk out of the bedroom and stand in the lounge doorway, amazed. The room is pristine again. All signs of the styling team's visit tidied and removed. The remnants of our afternoon tea all gone. Ingrid must have been back while I was in the other room. So quiet and discreet in her duties. I never even knew she was there. Chapter 15. Friday. Trent. The morning air is crisp as his driver navigates the bustling streets of Manchester. Alicia sits beside him, the city pulsing with life around them, its rhythm matching the anticipation thrumming in his veins. Today is pivotal. A final crucial plea to Manchester City Council's Planning and Regeneration Committee for the Orbit 2 project. Alicia adjusts her seatbelt, her demeanour calm, yet attentive. Sunlight catches the subtle highlights in her hair, casting fleeting patterns on her smooth, flawless skin. It would be easy to lose his head with this one, but he's learned his lesson there. Best to keep detached. This project means a lot to you, doesn't it? She asks him, her voice measured. Trent nods, looking back out of the window. It's more than a project. It's a vision for Manchester's future. She pauses, as if weighing up her next words. And your investors? They must share that vision to want to come on board, I guess. A slight weight presses on his chest. Alicia's curiosity has been evident before, but today, it feels like she's probing a bit deeper. They do. We've garnered strong support for Orbit Manchester from various quarters. She turns to face him, her expression earnest. I've read about projects where unforeseen challenges arise. Have you experienced that? He glances at her, searching for any sign of ulterior motives, but her face remains an enigma, a blend of genuine interest and something else. The need to expand her knowledge, perhaps. Every venture has its hurdles, he admits. The key is resilience and adaptability. The car's tires hum against the asphalt, filling the brief silence between them. Alicia gazes out the window, watching the city's architecture pass by. Your second orbit will redefine this skyline, she muses. Trent allows himself a small smile. That's the plan. As they approach the town hall extension, the building's Gothic Revival architecture looms, its intricate stonework a testament to Manchester's rich history. The structure stands as a bridge between the past and the future, a fitting venue for today's proceedings. The council chamber, located on level 2, is a grand space adorned with wood-paneled walls and tall, arched windows that allow natural light to spill in. Trent watches as the panel take their seats. He scans the faces of the committee members. Some are familiar, others less so, but all their expressions are neutral, giving little away. The chairperson, Councillor Joan Davies, begins the meeting with procedural formalities before nodding in his direction. Mr. Connors, you have the floor. He rises, adjusting his tie, a subconscious gesture to steady himself. Esteemed councillors, he begins confidently. The Orbit Manchester is not merely a project. It is a commitment to this great city. We've designed it to be Manchester's beacon of sustainability, innovation, and, crucially, community integration. As Trent delves into the specifics, green spaces, energy-efficient systems, and workplace hubs, he notices subtle shifts in some of the committee members' expressions. Faint frowns crease foreheads. Pens tap absently against notepads. The enthusiasm he had hoped to ignite in them isn't there. A flicker of unease settles in his stomach. He glances at Alicia beside him, and to his surprise, she meets his gaze with a reassuring nod before turning to the committee. If I may, she interjects, her tone respectful yet assertive. Beyond the architectural and environmental merits, Orbit Manchester would represent a catalyst for social change. It's not just about the environment and the business. It's also about creating opportunities for the ordinary people of Manchester, especially in areas that have long been underfunded. Imagine children looking up at this structure and seeing a symbol of hope and possibility for their own future. Her words hang magically in the air, and Trent watches the shift. Councillors exchanging thoughtful glances, a few nodding appreciatively. The atmosphere warms, their initial resistance dissolving. Councillor Davies leans forward, her expression softening. Miss Turner raises a compelling point. Community impact is paramount. We don't want just another impressive building that our diverse community feels excluded from. The discussion shifts, focusing now on the community benefits of the project. Alicia's intervention has steered the narrative, and now Trent is confident, giving examples that align with the council's core values. As the meeting concludes, a weight lifts from his shoulders. Councillor Davies nods, offering Trent a measured smile. Thank you for your time and for presenting your proposal, Mr. Connors. The board will now deliberate very carefully. We'll be in touch once a decision has been made. When they get outside to wait for the driver to bring the car around, the late afternoon sun casts a golden hue over the city. Trent turns to Alicia.
You were remarkable in there, he says. Thank you.
She smiles warmly. I believe in this project, Trent. And I believe in you. Her words resonate, dissolving the remnants of his earlier skepticism. As they drive back, he feels compelled to share more.
There's something confidential you should know, he says, his voice tinged with vulnerability. Not all our funding is secured, so I've had to obscure some key costs, waiting for the right investors to step in. Manchester City Council won't dig too deep into the financials until the decision has been made.
Alicia remains silent, listening, encouraging. Trent exhales, running a hand through his hair.
And the building's eco-capabilities? Not quite as advanced as I've claimed. Not yet, anyway. But the bigger picture, what we're aiming to create, that is real.
She nods, her expression unreadable, but he feels reassured, safe. For the first time, Trent feels certain of her commitment. All his doubts have disappeared. Chapter 16. Alicia. The call from Hazel regarding the event arrives just as I'm settling down with a coffee. It's as if she's put another hat on, greeting me now with a bright voice that promises efficiency and enthusiasm.
Hi, Alicia, Hazel here, calling about the event.
I imagine her sitting in the middle of a whirlwind of notepads and ideas, and she wastes no time launching into all the final details for tomorrow's party.
I just wanted to confirm a few things with you, she says carefully. Trent told me he wants to go all out for this one, so we've already told guests it's formal attire. We've got a champagne glass fountain, live music, everything as grand and glamorous as possible.
I picture the summer party venue again, the towering windows, chandeliers that glitter with crystal rain, and the gleam of the polished floors. Sounds incredible, I say, keeping my voice steady. My priority is to fill the role I'm here to do, and the sooner I can get rid of Hazel's trivial requests, the better. I'd love to help however I can. Trent wanted me to get involved with welcoming the guests, so I thought maybe something personal. Little touches to make people feel comfortable as soon as they arrive. My work for Elevate flashes before me. My assigned mind-numbing duty of dishing out endless glasses of champagne at the door for guests who barely glanced my way. Thank God that's behind me.
Oh, a welcome drink at the door, I love that, Hazel exclaims. Maybe we could have individual place cards, something handwritten and elegant, welcoming each guest by name? It would be just Trent's style to keep things personal.
Perfect, I reply as if I care.
And perhaps each guest could receive a small token as they arrive, something unique that speaks of Trent and his brand. You are a natural at this,
Hazel says, then lets out a light laugh.
No wonder he chose you.
Chose me? Seems like an odd thing to say. There's a brief pause before Hazel speaks again.
Saskia, who was here before you, was, let's just say, quite tricky to please. You've got some great ideas of your own.
It's so awful what happened, I say carefully, sensing an opportunity. Not that I know much about it. Hazel stays quiet. I can hear her breathing on the end of the line. Then she says,
if you're curious, I think you'd be best to ask Trent about what happened. But I know he doesn't like to talk about it for obvious reasons. Finally, when Hazel has rung off, I've got a bit of time to myself. Trent instructed his driver to drop me back at the Orbit after the Manchester meeting while he went to view a plot of development land in Notting Hill. It's the first chance I've had to take some time to look into Saskia's death for myself. I sit cross-legged on the floor of the lounge, the laptop balanced on the coffee table. My fingers hover cautiously above the keys. The penthouse is warm and still. Ingrid came this morning and left about an hour ago, only speaking to me when she absolutely needed to. I Google, Saskia Portman death, The Orbit, London. The screen floods with news articles and glossy features about The Orbit. Its striking design, its place among London's most exclusive destinations. There are profiles of Trent, interviews highlighting his vision, and listicles ranking the penthouse among the city's most sought-after addresses. I scroll through page after page, my focus narrowing, searching for one name, Saskia Portman. But there's nothing, not a single mention. Far from being relieved, I feel a little sick. Why do I get the distinct feeling information is being held back? Hidden, even. I try again. Trent Connors and Saskia Portman. It feels like casting a line into dark waters, hoping to snag something, while at the same time being nervous about what I might find. But again, there's nothing. I reword my search. Death of Saskia Portman, London. When I hit enter, the answer is immediate. The Metro, London, March 2024. Woman found dead in tragic drowning incident. Residents of London's newest metropolitan enclave, The Orbit, were left in shock after the tragic death of Saskia Portman, 27, who was drowned in the building's unique sky pool late on Sunday evening. Emergency services were called, but despite efforts to revive her, Miss Portman was pronounced dead at the scene. DI AJ Kumar told the Metro, "The death of this young woman was a tragic accident that occurred when she took a late-night swim alone. We appeal for everyone to show respect and to avoid speculating online." Saskia's mother expressed her devastation at the loss of her only daughter. "Saskia was my world. I just can't understand how this happened." Investigators revealed that the pool CCTV cameras, which might have provided clarity on the circumstances leading up to and during the incident, were unfortunately not operational that day due to technical issues. Miss Portman, a marketing professional described by residents of The Orbit as bright and full of life, was a regular visitor to the building. Flowers and notes of condolence have been placed near to the pool area as a mark of respect. D.I. Kumar urged anyone with relevant information about Miss Portman leading up to the tragedy to come forward. "Our thoughts remain with Saskia's family and her loved ones during this difficult time. It would comfort them if we could shed any light on the circumstances of that evening," he concluded. An inquest into the circumstances surrounding Saskia's death is expected to take place in the coming weeks. The newspaper headline feels like someone landed a left hook on my jaw. I sit there, staring at the laptop, trying to compute the fact that Trent has kept this from me. The fact he took me up to that same pool the night we met. It's sick. Saskia was his girlfriend. Surely any decent person would never want to go in the pool where she died ever again. My breathing is ragged and uneven, but I force myself to turn again to the newspaper's cold recounting of facts. Each line tightens the knot in my stomach. I thought I was piecing things together, but the more I read, the more I realize how little I've figured out about Saskia, about this place, about Trent. Just before we left the Manchester meeting earlier, Trent said he needed to use the bathroom. No rush, just a casual remark as he stepped away, leaving me in the foyer. But something about the way he said it made me pause. I gave it a few seconds, then followed. The corridor he'd turned into was quiet, the hum of voices from the breaking up of the chamber meeting fading behind me. I kept my steps light, stopping just before the corner. Peering around, I spotted him. Trent, standing close to one of the officials from the meeting. Not a senior figure, not one of the decision makers, a junior. A young, smartly dressed guy, unassuming. Someone most people in that room had probably overlooked. Someone Trent had obviously met before, judging by their close proximity. Their conversation was hushed. The junior official nodded and muttered something, glancing around like he knew they shouldn't be talking. I watched, my stomach tightening. I couldn't hear the words, but I didn't need to. Trent wasn't just here to make his case in front of the council. It looked to me like he was now covering his bases, making sure things went his way. When he finally clapped the man on the shoulder and walked back toward the main hall, I slipped away before he could see me. By the time he reached me back in the foyer, he was all charm as usual. I glanced at the online article again, and a shiver crawls up my spine. Here I am, sitting in Trent Connor's world, locked behind biometric scans and gold key cards, surrounded by immense wealth and power that isn't mine. And now it hits me with startling clarity. I'm not at all sure I know what I've got myself into here. Chapter 17. Jen. The coffee in Jen's mug is barely warm, but she drinks it anyway. The bitterness chafes her throat, matching the throb behind her sore eyes. This is her third cup this morning, but she still feels drugged and unfocused. Mercifully, Brody is asleep. She glances through the doorway at his tiny body sprawled across the worn sofa. One chubby hand dangles over the edge, the other clutches Flopsy, his beloved threadbare rabbit, by the ear. His breathing is soft now, rhythmic. No longer the jagged, labored gasps that had sent icy slivers of fear down her spine in the early hours of this morning. At 2 a.m., his fever had worsened and she began to really panic. Even thought about ringing Alicia. She'd sat there on the floor beside him, a cool flannel in one hand and a thermometer in the other, whispering desperate words of comfort as he stirred and whimpered. His damp hair had clung to his forehead, cheeks glowing crimson as he sweated. Each tiny sip of water he managed felt like a triumph. She'd have gone to rouse Pete, but it would have been pointless. He'd stumbled in just before midnight after a long session at the pub, drunk enough to reek of stale lager. His leering expression, sharp and mean. Mumbling something incoherent, he'd swayed on his feet before collapsing onto the bed fully clothed. He hadn't even bothered to kick off his shoes. But his slurred words had lingered in her head, spiked with the suggestion of the aggression she knew only too well. She'd left him to his sleep and returned to her nephew. Jenna checked the thermometer again and